أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. After a very long break, we start to continue again with the khutbas we were doing from Nahjul Balagha. I think we just started sermon number 22, and we couldn't continue deep into the khutbah. So just to remind what we were doing, I start from the beginning of the khutbah again. Now the khutbah, as it's mentioned by Sayyid al-Razi rahmatullah alayhi, is about the Naqiseen, those who broke the pledge, reneged in their pledge and allegiance with Amir al-Mu'mineen. حِينَ بَلَغَهُ خَبَرَ النَّاقِثِينَ لِبَيْعَتِهِ. When the information about the breach of the allegiance reached him, so certainly he would have been very upset when he heard that Talha and Zubair have breached the pledge and have broken with him, and therefore he, of course, after getting the full details about the situation, he addressed this khutbah to the people, and of course they told him why Talha and Zubair had broken with him, what is their justification, what their reasons and arguments were, and upon hearing those arguments, he certainly became very, very upset, because they were just utter lies that they were making against Ali ibn Abi Talib. Now, this khutbah, of course, should have been addressed to the people before the Jamal, so in the very first year of Amir al-Mu'mineen's Khilafah. However, Khutbuddin al-Rawandi has mentioned that this is a khutbah which was delivered on the occasion of Siffin. Although the content of the khutbah, to some extent, would conform with what Muawiyah had claimed, but of course we would see that the overall information the khutbah gives us does not comply with what Qutbuddin al-Rawandi has said, and it goes with what, of course, Sayyid al-Razi has mentioned, that this is before Jamal, when the report reached him. Now, the report reached him that Talha and Zubair, in collaboration with Aisha, have mustered a considerable force. They went to Basra, they gathered some force, they called some people to join them, and they mustered some force. And this is why he says, أَلَا وَإِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ قَدْ ظَنَّ رَخِزَّهُ. And this is a very strong, of course, statement by Amir al-Mu'min against Talha, Zubair and Aisha. That it's not Talha and Zubair and Aisha, it's Shaitan who has actually encouraged, instigated his own party to come together. If we go to the argument that went between Sahaba at the beginning, and especially during the skirmishes which happened after Uthman, we will see lots of this literature going on. And it appears that certainly some of the Sahaba believe that some others are followers of Shaitan. And we might say, as I mentioned previously, we might say that we do not want to judge them, but at least we should have an analysis about the issue. That's why these great Sahabi of the Prophet were actually attributing such things to each other. Certainly Talha and Zubair, who wanted to fight against the Caliph, they had their justifications, calling Amir al-Mu'mineen that he had killed Uthman, for example, attributing to him a great sin, and Amir al-Mu'mineen attributes to them that they are followers of Shaitan. And therefore, we would see that the type of attitude of Shiites towards the judgment of Sahaba is not very far away from the method and manners of Sahaba themselves. These were the Sahabi who actually did judge each other. They did analyze the situation. And of course, we cannot say that we just leave aside. It's something that has happened in the history. Of course, we should not insult, we should not offend, but we have the right to analyze the issue which went wrong. And of course, wherever we read, we study this type of literature, we have, in a certain way, I mean, whether we are a Sunni or a Shia, we have to somehow analyze the situation in our minds. Now, Amirul Mu'mineen attributes the whole issue to Shaitan, not to the judgment, of course, of Talha and Zubayr and Aisha. أَلَا وَإِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ قَدْ ذَمَّرَ حِزْبَهُ Shaitan has instigated his own party. وَاسْتَجْلَبَ جَلَبَهُ And has mustered his force. Stajlaba is a word which is used in the Quran as well. وَاسْتَجْلَبَ which is something mentioned in the Quran. وَاسْتَجْلِبْ عَلَيْهِمْ بِخَيْلِكَ وَرَجْلِكَ And you muster all your forces together against this human being to see what you can do against them. And jalab, of course, is what is collected, what is mustered. However, usually to something very inconsiderable, something very base, the word jalab is used for that. So it means it's a very mean type of army that they have collected. It's an army of very mean people, of not honorable people that they have collected. وَاسْتَجْلَبَ جَلَبَ لَيَعُودَ الْجَوْرُ إِلَىٰ أَوْطَانِهِ I want you to really pay attention to the literature Amir al-Mu'min is using. I mean, what went on in the history comes out of every word of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. By Allah, لَيَعُودَ الْجَوْرُ إِلَىٰ أَوْطَانِهِ So that the injustice and oppression may come back to its position. Awtan is the plural of watan, so it may come back to its position. Meaning that now the jawr has been removed. They want to return it again. And this is of course a type of insinuation of what went before Amirul Mu'mineen. وَيَرْجِعَ الْبَاطِلُ إِلَىٰ نِصَابِهِ And so that the batil and wrong come back to where it was. And the type of argument that Amir al-Mu'mineen puts forward is that they want the same battle that was going on before. And this, of course, is what Talha and Zubayr mentioned very frankly to Amir al-Mu'mineen, that you have to give us something. We have made bay'ah with you, you have to give us something. And that something was the emara of a city, or a county, or something like that, and Amir al-Mu'mineen said, I'm not going to buy bay'ah to you. I will decide my decision later on. But it's not that because you have paid allegiance to me, I'm going to give you something. This is not a type of modern politics, of course. Amir al-Mu'mineen was not going according to the modern politics. In modern politics, you have to do this. I mean, you buy votes. And this is exactly what, according to the history, Talha and Zubayr wanted to do, because their votes were crucial. Their bay'ah were crucial. And they wanted to sell that bay'ah to Amir al-Mu'mineen, that since we have made bay'ah with you, this has been the custom, this has been the manners of previous people, so you have to do that. You have to give us the same thing that other people. So Amir al-Mu'mineen said, they wanted to bring back the ba'ath. So it means that Amir al-Mu'mineen does not approve of that type of method of selling or buying bay'ah. Giving away things because of the support of some people. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen says that I swear by God, Wallahi ma ankaru alayya munkaran. Munkar is an indecent action that someone commits a sin, something which is against the custom, against the order, he says, I swear by God that what they have done to me, breaching the allegiance, is not because that they are blaming me for some wrong that I have done. And of course, this was very clear for Amirul Mu'minin. It was not because anything wrong was happened. وَاللَّهِ مَا أَنْكَرُوا عَلَيَّ مُنْكَرًا وَلَا جَعَلُوا بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَكُمْ نَصْفًا. And they have not put between me and themselves. Now, نَصْفًا might mean a judge or might mean justice. So they have not put between me and themselves a judge to judge us. They have just decided for themselves that they want to break with me and they want to fight against me. And you know, of course, in Islam, one of the most appalling things was, especially right after the prophets, was to break a bay'ah with a caliph. And that's why Amir al-Mu'minin was trying very hard that this would not happen about Uthman. And he was defending Uthman very much so that the people do not come and kill Uthman and break their bay'ah with him. So this, of course, was something really unacceptable on the part of Talha and Zubayr, breaking the bay'ah with Amir al-Mu'minin. So he says, they have not done justice between me and themselves, or they have not set a judge between me and themselves. Now, what Talha and Zubayr, now you can imagine, of course, Talha and Zubayr wanted to muster a force against a rightful caliph, someone to whom they had paid allegiance themselves. Of course, then later on they said that we were forced to pay allegiance, and that's why we are breaking it now, which was again something made up. There was no force. I mean, people, by their own willingness, went to Amir al-Mu'min and they paid bay'ah to him. It cannot be imagined that there was any type of force on Talha and Zubayr to pay bay'ah. So the first thing they said was is that we paid bay'ah under duress, so now we want to break it. And secondly, they said that Ali is someone who partly or wholly is responsible for the killing of Uthman. And this was very amazing because the history has reported in the most explicit way that Talha and Zubayr themselves were actually responsible for the killing of Uthman. Here in the translation, something is reported from Ibn Abi al-Hadid. Ibn Abi al-Hadid says that in page 138, those who have written the account of assassination of Uthman state that the day of his killing, Talha's condition was that in order to obscure himself from the eyes of the people, he had a veil on his face and was shooting arrows at Uthman's house. And in this connection, about Zubayr's ideas, he writes, historians have also stated that as Zubayr used to say, kill Uthman, he has altered your faith. People said, your son is standing at his door and God guarding him, Abdullah ibn Zubayr. And he replied, even my son may be lost, but Uthman must be killed. Uthman will be lying like a carcass on Sirat tomorrow. And about Aisha ibn Abd al-Rabbih writes that Al-Mughirah ibn Shu'bah came to Aisha when she said, O Abu Abdullah, I wish you had been with me on the day of Jamal, how arrows were piercing through my hawdaj, camel litter, till some of them stuck my body. Al-Mughira said, I wish one of them should have killed you. She said, Allah may have pity on you. Why so? He replied, so that it would have been some atonement for what you had done against Uthman. I think we discussed this before, that those people who actually instigated the whole issue were people who now have come and attribute the death of Uthman to Ali ibn Abi Talib. And the irony is that Ali ibn Abi Talib among the Sahaba was probably the only one who was discouraging people to do this, and who had sent Hassan and Hussein to take water for Uthman. And he went and tried to make a peace between Uthman and these people who were supporting the insurgency, so to speak. And also, he was the one who admonished Uthman, saying that you surrender to what they want, because I heard from the Prophet that the Caliph will be killed in this Ummah, after which the door of Fitna will be opened. And I fear that that Caliph might be you. And so he was a type of person who was trying to bring everything to a peaceful end. Now it is really, really hard for him. People coming out, whether in Jamal or in Safin, whether with Talha and Zubayr or with Muawiyah, coming out and saying that we are fighting you because of the blood of Uthman. We want to take revenge of Uthman. So here Amirul Mu'mineen says, وَإِنَّهُمْ لَيَطْلُبُونَ حَقًّا هُمْ تَرَكُوا. They are demanding a right that they themselves have abandoned. If it was a right to defend Uthman, they themselves had abandoned that right. If it was right to defend the Caliph and stop that insurgency, they themselves not only did not stop it, but they instigated it. They put fuel into it. وَدَّمَنْ هُمْ سَفَقُوا. And this is, of course, a very big type of accusation and even when it's given to Talha and Zubayr. This is the blood they themselves shed. And now they have come and they are seeking that blood from me, and they are fighting against me because of that blood. فَلَئِنْ كُنْتُ شَرِيكَهُمْ فِيهِ فَإِنَّ لَهُمْ لَنَصِيبَهُمْ مِنْهِ. Well, there is no doubt that they were a part of the whole insurgency. They were a part of those Sahaba who came and fought against Uthman. And Amir al-Mu'min was not. But he said, well, let's concede that I was a part of it. But could they deny that they were not a part? If they could not deny, and they couldn't deny, then they are partners with me. They are the partners in that action. And how they have come and they want to revenge the blood of Uthman, take the revenge from me. وَلَئِنْ كَانُوا وَلُّوهُ دُونِي فَمَتْ تَبَعَتُوا إِلَّا عِنْدَهُمْ. And if this is the case, which is the case, that they did it themselves, they were the people who did it alone, then they have to face the consequences, not me. وَإِنَّ أَعْظَمَ حُجَّتِهِمْ لَعَلَىٰ أَنْفُسِهِمْ. And the argument that they are putting forward, the biggest part of that argument is against themselves, not against me. Now, then Amir al-Mu'mineen says that this is something of the past even. Now, Uthman was killed, people came, they paid allegiance to me, these people themselves have come and paid allegiance. What happened that suddenly they thought that they have to take the revenge of the blood of Uthman from me? And why they did not think about it before, why they did pay allegiance to me. So it says, وَيَرْكَذَعُونَ أُمَّنْ قَدْ فَتَمَتْ. They are suckling from a mother whose milk is already dry. There's nothing to come out of this anymore. And of course, the people after Uthman tried to take the issue against Ali to the extreme. And you know, in Safin, Muawiyah came from Sham all that way long to take the revenge of the blood of Uthman, while he was a part of it himself as well. So, the issue was a dead issue already. Everyone had appeared to be pleased with Amir al-Mu'mineen as a Caliph, and now they are trying to suckle a mother whose milk is already dry. Something which is of the past. وَيُحْيُونَ بِذْعَةً قَدْ أُمِيتَتْ. And they are trying to to bring about or to make alive a bid'ah which is already dead. And that bid'ah was, of course, the bid'ah of killing people because of a caliph which was killed. Ya khaybat al-da'i, how disappointing is the one who calls. How disappointed. Ya khaybat al-da'i is like ya hasratan ala al-ibad. How pity should be on the people. Ya khaybat al-da'i means how disappointed is the one who calls. Because he will be disappointed by calling people. Man da'a wa ila ma'ujib. It's just humiliating those people who were called to this fight. And the cause of the fight, he is actually humiliating all of them. Man da'a, who are the people whom they have called? And what is the reason for which they have gathered? What is the cause? Just because of the blood of Uthman, they have come to make another fitna. If there was a bloodshed, then it was, of course, the awliya of Uthman who should have come forth. Now, of course, this was not a personal issue. If there was a bloodshed, now you cannot just stir things up to make more bloodshed. And you know how much bloodshed went on for this contemptible cause. And how Amir al-Mu'min is actually making a type of contemptible cause. Ila ma'uji, what is the cause that they have come together for? وَإِنِّي لَرَاضٍ بِخُجَّةِ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِمْ وَعِلْمِهِمْ فِيهِمْ. He says, of course, I do not think that they are going to accept my hujjah and my argument. I am pleased with hujjatullahi alayhim. Allah is going to put his argument for them forward on the day of judgment. And I am pleased with that. And I am pleased that Allah knows what goes in their hearts and what goes in my heart. Now, one other interesting thing that happened was that they had written a letter to Amir al-Mu'minin that you have to submit to us or you have to face death. You will face our spears and our swords. And this actually made Amir al-Mu'minin smile, threatening him, first of all of death, and secondly of sword and spear, something that he was used to right from the beginning of his youth. So here he gives an answer to what they had wrote. فَإِنْ عَبَوْا. Now, if they refuse to submit to me and to desist, if they refuse to desist, أَعْطَيْتُهُمْ حَدَّ السَّيْفِ, I will give them the edge of the sword, the sharpness of the sword. وَكَفَى بِهِ شَافِيًا مِنَ الْبَاطِلِ. And after, of course, the arguments do not work, then what cures from batil is this edge of the sword, the sharpness of the sword. وَنَاصِرًا لِلْحَقِّ, and how sufficient it is to support the haqq. Now, of course, this might seem in our new world that we talk about, all our talks are anti-violence, that violence is not a good thing, and such issues, this might seem really strange. Amir al-Mu'minin is saying that the sharpness of the sword is Nasiran ala Nasiran lil haq, is a help for haq and is a cure for removing the battle. But well, this is not the truth. I mean, if you are faced with an arrogant person who does not want to accept any argument and they want to attack, as Amir al-Mu'minin didn't have anything against them, they wanted to attack Amir al-Mu'minin. And of course, those people who nowadays talk about violence, you see that they justify their own violence in the most beautiful ways. I mean, now of course, America, which is in the forefront of this war against violence, look how violent they are when they come to places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And of course, when they talk about violence, they mean that you shouldn't use any violence against us. Or we might say, yes, you don't use unjustified violence. That's right. But I don't think any reasonable person in this world would say that justified violence is wrong to be used. And you see that every reasonable people in this world uses justifiable violence. Now take the example of police. Isn't it a justifiable violence? I mean, the police, the armed police is a violent force. But of course, this violent force is justified in the mind of everyone, and they are respected. Because they are certainly, we see the police to be as a ناصر للحق, someone who supports haq, rights of the people. And of course, someone who removes the battle and injustice of wrongdoers against ordinary people. So, of course, that's a justifiable violence. Here, of course, Amirul Mu'minin is talking about that type of justifiable violence, a violence which is used when, of course, you have no other choice. You are faced with people who are plunderers, who are robbers, who are thinking of taking the rights of other people. This is how, of course, violence is justified, and this is why Amirul Mu'minin says that حد السيف كفى به شافيا من الباطل, the best cure for removing the باطل. Now, ومن العجب, now how strange, how amazing, بعثهم إلي أن أبرز للطعان وأن أصبر للجلاد. And this is amazing, they have sent a messenger to me telling me that if you do not submit, then you have come out for the wounds of spears. وَأَنْ أَصْبِرَ لِلْجَلَادِ, and I have to be patient over the swords, over the wounds of the swords. حَبَلَتْهُمُ الْحَبُولِ, this is like ثَكَلَتْهُمْ أُمَّهَاتُهُمْ, may their mothers mourn them. This sentence is said when something very, very extraordinary is mentioned by someone, or someone, or is done by someone. لَقَدْ كُنْتُ وَمَا أُهَدِّدُ بِالْحَرْبِ, I have never ever been threatened by war. It means that anyone who knows me, they are not going to threaten me by war, because I have been brought up in all those battles of the prophets. This لَقَدْ كُنْتُ وَمَا أُهَدِّدُ بِالْحَرْبِ means مَا ذِلْتُ مَا أُحَدَّدُ بِالْحَرْبِ, I never have been. It's just like, for example, وَكَانَ اللَّهُ عَلِيمًا حَكِيمًا. It doesn't mean that Allah was عَلِيمًا حَكِيمًا. It means that مَا زَالَ اللَّهُ عَلِيمًا حَكِيمًا. Allah has always been عَلِيمًا حَكِيمًا. And it means that here, لَقَدْ كُنْتُ وَمَا أُحَدَّدُ بِالْحَرْبِ means I never ever have been threatened by war. وَلَا أُرْحَبُ بِالذَّعْرِ, and no one has ever fighting me by the hit of the swords. وَإِنِّي لَعَلَى يَقِينٍ مِنْ رَبِّي وَغَيْرِ شُبْهَةٍ مِنْ دِينِ, and of course I have a yaqeen, I am on a yaqeen from my Lord, and I have no confusion from my deen, so I'm not afraid of war. Those people who are afraid of war are when they hesitate because they have some sort of confusion. They don't know whether they are right or they are wrong. But I know I'm right. I have no confusion, so I'm not afraid of anything. Now, Ibn Abi al-Hadid mentions that, just two things I want to mention to complement this khutbah. Ibn Abi al-Hadid mentions that this khutbah is a very famous khutbah, and it's mentioned by Abu Mikhnaf. Abu Mikhnaf is a historian of the 2nd century, and mainly the history of Karbala is mentioned by Abu Mikhnaf, and all those who have written it, like Tabari, like Shaykh al-Mufid, like others, they have taken it from Abu Mikhnaf. And of course, many of the khutbahs of Abu Mikhnaf, of Amirul Mu'minin, Abu Mikhnaf has actually collected and reported in the 2nd century. This was a long time before Sharif al-Razi. He says that this khutbah, of course, is just a part of the khutbah which was delivered by Amir al-Mu'minin at the time. And most of this is reported in the whole khutbah which is mentioned by
Abu Mukhnaf.
Now, Abu Mukhnaf says that, some of those sentences which I think should be complemented to this, what Abu Mukhnaf has mentioned and Sayyid al-Razi has omitted, is that Amir al-Mu'min says, "Inna afdal al-maws al-qatl." The best type of death is to be killed. To be killed in a war, to become a shaheed. وَالَّذِي نَفْسُ عَلِيًّا بَيَدِهِ لَأَلْفُ ضَرْبَةٍ بِالسَّيْفِ هُوَ أَحْوَنُ مِنْ مَوْتَةٍ وَاحِدَةٍ عَلَى الْفِرَاشِ. I swear by the one who my soul is in his hand. نَفْسُ عَلِيًّا بَيَدِهِ. The soul of Ali is in his hand. 1,000 hits by the sword is easier for me than dying in my bed. And you see how eager Amir al-Mu'min is for Shahada. And this is why he says that you are now threatening me by death and frightening me of war. In this regard, of course, I want to mention something just after I finish this. He says, "Inna afdal al-maut al-qat, wal-ladhi nafsu aliyin bi-yade, la-alfu darbatan bi-sayf wa ahwanu min mautatin wa-akhidatin ala al-firash." And this is, of course, we know all of us are going to die. One sooner or later, all of us are going to die. And especially a man who is about 60 years old, like Amir al-Mu'minin, he knows that soon he's going to die. If the Prophet passed away, of course, أَفَإِن مِتَّ فَهُمُ الْخَالِدُونَ, as the Quran says, they think that they are going to last forever. If you die, do they have any hope that they will live? If anyone deserves to live, the Prophet or the Prophet of God. If they die, it means that everyone dies. And what a blessing it will be for someone who dies for the sake of God, who offers their soul to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is why Amir al-Mu'min says 1,000 hits of swords will be easier for me than dying in my bed. Allahumma. Now then he makes a dua there which is not mentioned here. Allahumma inna talha nakatha bayati wa alabba ala Uthman hatta qatala. My Lord, you know that Talha breached my bayah and he instigated people against Uthman until he killed him. Well, this shows that Talha had a very outstanding role there in encouraging people to fight against Uthman. ثُمَّ أَذَحَنِي بِهِ وَرَمَانِي. Then he attributed that sin to me. And this, of course, is the case of a verse in the Quran that says, whoever commits a sin, then they attribute it to an innocent person, they have to wait a great punishment by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allahumma falakum hilhu. My Lord, do not give him a response. Allahumma inna al-Zubayr qata'a rahim. Zubayr has done a qat'u rahim. He did not keep the respect of the bound of relation that was with us because they were cousins. وَنَكَثَ بَيْعَةٍ and breached my bayah. وَظَاهَرَ عَلَىٰ عَدُوِّي فَاكْفَنِيهِ الْيَوْمِ مَا شَيْءٍ and he supported my enemy. So you know what you should do with him today. And this was the dua against Zubayr. Now, about the attitude of Amir al-Mu'mineen towards Shahada and towards fighting and towards death. In a khutbah, the 156th khutbah of Nahj al-Balagha, it's very famous, it's recorded in other books as well. When Amir al-Mu'mineen is talking, someone stands and says, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, did the Prophet say anything about fitna after him?" He said, "Yes, when this ayah was revealed, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alif Lam Mim, ahasiba an-nas an yusraku, an yaqulu amanna wa hum la yuftanun. Would the people think that they would say, we believe, and then we leave them without trying them. I realized that the fitna would not be there until the Prophet is among us. So I knew that the fitna is going to come after the Prophet. And then I asked the Prophet, is this fitna going to happen? And the Prophet said, yes, Ya Ali, إِنَّ النَّاسَ سَيُفْتَنُونَ بَعْدِي فَكَيْفَ صَبْرُكَ إِلَى. People are going to be tried, how you want to endure that? How is your patience? Amirul Mu'mineen was surprised because he thought he's going to be shaheed before Prophet passes away. And now Prophet is telling him that the fitna will be there, he will be there. And Amirul Mu'mineen says, he says that after Prophet mentions that, I told him, فَقُلْتُ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ أَوَلَيْسَ قَدْ قُلْتَ لِي يَوْمَ أُخُدْهِ حَيْثُ اسْتُشْهِدَ مِنَ الْمُسْلِمِينَ مَنْ اسْتُشْهِدْ وَحِيثَتْ أَنِّيَ شَهَادَ أَشَقَّ ذَلِكَ عَلَيْهِ فَقُلْتَ لِي يَا عَلِي أَبْشِرْ فَإِنَّ شَهَادَ مِنْ بَرَاهِ. He says that, O Prophet, didn't you tell me on the day of Uhud, when many of the Muslimun were martyred, and martyrdom was taken away from me, hidat anni shahada, and that was very, very difficult for me. In a way, he had lost his patience after he saw the battle was finished and he was still alive. He went to the Prophet and said, Ya Rasulallah, my heart is very tight now, I cannot bear it, and you told me, فقلت لي يا علي ابشر فإن الشهادة من ورائك. Give the good, have this good tiding that shahada is waiting for you. You will be martyred. So when Prophet said, of course, because I have taken the text out of its context, when Prophet said that the fitna will be there and you will be there, Amirul Mu'mineen said, I went to the Prophet, I said, didn't you tell me on the day of Uhud that I will be martyred? And then Prophet says, فَقَالَ لِي إِنَّ ذَلِكَ كَذَلِكَ. Yes, that would be the case, that would be the case. You will become a shaheed. فَكَيْفَ صَبْرُكَ إِذًا. How can you have patience on that shahada? فَقُلْتُ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ لَيْسَ هَذَا مِنْ مَوَاطِنِ الصَّبْرِ. I said, Ya Rasulallah, you are giving me good news. This is not a case that I have to have patience for. وَلَاكِمْ مِنْ مَوَاطِنِ الْبُشْرَى وَالشُّكْرِ. This is a good news for me. This is what I have to thank Allah for, it, not to have patience over it. So, if this is the attitude of Amir al-Mu'mineen, it seems very funny that he is being somehow threatened by the fighting. And this is why Amir al-Mu'mineen said, لَقَدْ كُنْتُ وَمَا أُحَدَّدُ بِالْحَبْ. I have never ever been threatened by fighting or by war or something like that. So this is of course a very bitter story and something that our brothers from Ahlul Sunnah, maybe they are justified in some way if they say we just want to forget all these things, because they are so bitter. I mean, you cannot really imagine why these things happen to these closest companions of the Prophet. However, of course, although they are bitter, they are part of history. What can we do about it? We just read the history, we make our judgments, and of course the final judge is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who makes his own judgments on the appointed day. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa alayhi wa
sallam. Zubair and others, and they did see Muhammad's height in all the words with the Prophet, and they knew they weren't on the right, even though they pretended otherwise. Were they scared? I mean, did they know they were going to lose before they even started?
Well, that's why they sought the help from Aisha. They thought that if they take Aisha on their side, because Aisha was not somehow contemplating to ever take part in a battle, but probably they thought that if they have Aisha, Umm al-Mu'mineen, on their side, they would somehow attack all the followers of Ali, and everyone would be dispersed from around Ali. And they were hoping that they muster much, much larger force than they could eventually muster. And that's why they thought that they could defeat Ali in this way. However, of course, most of the Muslims were aware, and they were not tricked, but even by Umm al-Mu'mineen being with that force. And of course, but people always make mistakes. And in a way, they repented afterwards. I mean, they repented even in the battlefield, they repented from what they did, especially after they saw that they were losing. And Amir al-Mu'mineen said that, "Do not harm them," and they ran away. However, of course, the destiny was something else. People went after them and they killed them. And of course, Amir al-Mu'mineen was very upset when they were killed. He didn't want them to be killed. But, well, this is how destiny comes. I mean, you go against justice and then justice goes against you.
Well, thank you very much, Rich. Amazing to measure of the man that Imam Ali would protect someone like this man in that situation. He was the one who, as you say, history records, is at the forefront of the ones who implemented it. Would it be that was because his life was under threat, or would Imam Ali have given the same level of support to Abu Bakr and Umar? And if that was the case, should we be modifying how we feel about the others in our hearts?
I think Amir al-Mu'mineen was very much concerned about the unity of the Ummah, and this is what he mentions in many of his sermons, that if it was not for the sake of Islam and not of the fear of return of shirk, you would have found us acting differently. But the main thing for Amir al-Mu'mineen was just to keep the entity of Islam, the very existence of Islam, rather than who should rule, who's right, who's wrong. And since he paid allegiance, he was actually very faithful to his allegiance. And this is something that I think everyone has to learn from him. It was completely something which was against his will, against his wish, things were going against what he wanted. If you can imagine, if other Sahaba were so much upset by what Uthman was doing, how Amir al-Mu'mineen would have been upset about it. But of course, he was not thinking short term, he was thinking long term, and that's why he was so faithful to that. And of course, no one can realize what Amir al-Mu'mineen experienced unless they go to that very, very bitter history. I mean, we just have heard something about it. It was really, as he explained himself, فَصَبَرْتُ وَفِي الْعَيْنِ قَضَى وَفِي الْحَدْرَ شَجَى. There was a thorn in my eyes and a bone in my throat, but I had patience. And this was really his situation.
I think that the relationship between the followers of Ali and others ebb and flow over time. Mm-hmm. And we're in a situation, I suppose, in the present time where it may become critical in relationships. So should we, as individuals, be taking the example of Imam Ali and having a bone in our throat and doing something about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, yes. I mean, it's Islam which is important, and Islam exists with Muslimin. I mean, you cannot say, okay, just let's efface the 90-80% of Muslims because they are not Shia and so forth. And that's why we are very much advised to brotherhoods. And even, I mean, if you really, really want to follow the example of Ali ibn Abi Talib and other A'imma alayhi wasalam, they were very, very mindful of their relationship with the bigger community of Muslims. And this is what we have to be very careful about. And of course, at times we have been very ignorant about it, at times we have been very considerate of it. Well, now I think we have to be very, very careful. We have to really, for petty issues, we shouldn't make trouble inside the community. And even sometimes, one thing is that these discussions might somehow disturb the tranquility and calm in the community. Even we have to be careful about these discussions. However, I think these discussions would show, whether to a Shia or to a Sunni, that how the history has developed. There is no intention to insult anyone, there is no intention to offend any of the companions, just how it was developed, how they looked at each other, how they kept how their behavior was towards each other. And even if these discussions are going to cause trouble, I think we have to stop it.
Just to continue from Riyad's point, we have a discussion like that, and then Riyad pointed out that in the present time, by taking an example from Normali, we can change our attitude and then cooperate with the whole of the Ummah of Muslims, although we have to swallow the pride. But then this discussion would take the examples from this.
Well, in fact, this discussion would give us an example, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's good to discuss.
It's good, yeah, that's why we are discussing this. Yeah. But in case it becomes detrimental, I mean, we have to stop.
I don't mean to hold up the whole discussion, but I just wanted to make one point. I think that, you know, my view is, I'm sure that the majority would agree, if we don't have to be apologists for being here, we have to be opposition as it is. I think that in trying to accommodate others doesn't mean that we have to dilute what we do.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
On this point, on these particular discussions, can we not say that there's anything there that Imam Ali perhaps didn't want to be second with the setting? And so there should be no reason for us not to talk about this topic.
As I said, this is why we are talking about these things. I mean, but taking the practical example of Imam Ali alayhi salam, he was supporting the community, the majority. And although he was doing it, he was never apologetic of his criticism against the caliphs. Practically, he was not breaching any pledge, he was not breaking any law or anything like that. But he was not instigating people. This is very important. I mean, sometimes you might don't do anything, but you might instigate it. This is what we shouldn't do. We shouldn't be apologetic. And if you want my view, the Sunnis should be apologetic that they are Sunnis. Not us, of course, because we are on the right path. We are the followers of Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet. But we have to bear in mind that, of course, there is a major chunk of the community, the majority of the community, who do not understand this, who have other views. And of course, we, under no circumstances and for no price, we have to somehow create this unity between this minority and that majority.
Yes.
The point is that when you have somebody who you care for and love going through such bad times and upset, it's very difficult to support the other side. I mean,
we are not supporting Sayyidina Muawiyah, for example.
Because when you are trying to get on with people that are against somebody you value to a high esteem, and they have negative things to say, and they have quite a lot of history on the outside that is not true according to us and all that, and it's really difficult to then get on with them. It's really better not to just talk to them about it.
Well,
at the level of just the pleasant level,
yeah,
if they are Muslims, and,
yeah,
and leave this subject to the past. Because it's very difficult to agree or even have a discussion without feeling bad, then you start feeling quite bad about it. But
well, you don't need to have a discussion with them, but certainly we have to educate ourselves to know what's right, what's wrong. And if there is a good atmosphere, this discussion could somehow be taken to that atmosphere between Sunni scholars and Shia scholars. They can discuss the issue without cursing each other, without attributing kufr to each other, of course. But so long as that atmosphere is not present, then we just can study ourselves, discuss among ourselves what has happened, and do not argue with anyone, do not discuss it with those who might be upset with it. Once I was talking somewhere about Ashura and Imam Hussein in a mixed audience of Sunni and Shi'i, and one of the criticisms by our Sunni brothers was that why do you bring this up, the issue of Ashura? This is of course a blemish in the history of Islam. This is something bad. But by bringing it up, by every year, by somehow reminding people of that, you create disunity among Muslims. So wouldn't it be better to just leave it and forget it? Now, what I said was that certainly Imam Hussein didn't want to just commit suicide, just going there to be killed and that sort. He wanted to convey a message. And if we do not somehow take that message forward, we have betrayed his blood. We have betrayed the Prophet. So it's not the issue of creating disunity. It's just saying that, of course, we know the history went that way, but there was another message. And we have to listen to that message again. And that message did not come from a very ordinary person. It came from the grandson of the Prophet, from someone who was very, very loved by the Prophet, peace be on him. So I think we are justified in commemorating and reminding the events every year of, to ourselves and to others, but we have to somehow explain why we do this. We don't want the blood of Hussein to go vain. We don't want just to be abandoned like that. This is something which is not, I mean, this person is not a person which could be forgotten very easily. So, with all respect, of course, for others, we continue to convey this message forward.
Any other comments or questions?
The last part of what we did today. It was on page 137. 136, the English one, 137, the Arabic. The addition, one part was from Ibn Abi al-Hadid, who quotes from Abu Mahnaf. It's not in this book, of course. It was my own note, yes. And the other one about Uhud and Shahada is in Khutbah 156 of Nahjul Balagha.
The king of Ottoman and the people who were involved, and then pointing fingers to others, that it showed very crappy. Something similar to what we have this year in the modern history. As I said, the case of Hariri. Quite similar to what we have, people pointing others, those who are involved, trying to be innocent and then involved others. So,
yeah. Well, the difference is, the difference is, in the case of Hariri, you really don't know who did it. In the case of Osman, everyone knew, because people were present there. And everyone came together from different cities to do it. So it was not something which was unnoticed or neglected by people like Talha and Zubair, who were present there actually. In the case of Hariri, no one knows who has done it. It was a conspiracy of whom, we don't know. It was just an explosion. But with the case of Osman, it's very, very much different. But of course, there is a similarity. Those who have done it are attributing it on other people. Yes, that's the case.
Sheikh, taking from Mr. point, it seems that there was a very large group who actually killed Uthman or ignoring King Uthman, and that is why they were brought to justice or they were not brought to justice?
Well, they were not. The only person who was taken to task for that was Ali ibn Abi Talib, the one who defended. And since he became a caliph, had he not become a caliph, no one would have cared. But since he became a caliph, people started to fight against him, and the pretext was, of course, Uthman. Others, no, they were not brought to justice. I mean, Muawiyah came from Sham, he came for war. He said to Ali that you have to hand in those who killed Uthman to me. And Amir al-Mu'minin said that even if I knew, I wouldn't have done it, because what is your authority? I am the caliph. I have to decide. Why should I hand them to you? I mean, it was really funny. I mean, the way things went and how the Muslims were, the people were deceived by this type of arguments.
Well,
every case should be judged. I mean, Imam Ali, although he told to us that we have to be to side with the truth, but he himself kept quiet for a long time for other considerations. This is what we believe. Therefore, we always have to think reasonably, not because of our own lives or because we are afraid of something, of losing our life or profit or anything, but judging the whole situation altogether. And therefore, every case should be judged individually. And what is important is, yes, we always have to support truth. But in what way, with what tactics, with what strategy, that's something that we have to think about.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.